Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, your host for this weekend show. Shad will be joining us in the back half of the weekend show. We're going to start off by talking more broad markets, get some insights on just how stable these markets are after what has been a wild kind of 1 month ride of a correction for these markets. And it was just about 2 weeks ago that we saw a major sell-off in the markets that turned out to be quite the buy the dip opportunity. We'll also touch on the commodities, and in the back half of the show, we'll get into the energy sector. I'm kicking off the show with Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the Lyons Share Pro website. I'll post a link to Dana's website in the show notes. Be sure to check out that website to keep up to date with what Dana is seeing in these markets, what his models are telling him. Dana, let's just start off by recapping the last about 3 to 4 weeks of trading. I had you on the show about 3 weeks ago. That was right when the big tech names were starting to move lower. The NASDAQ was correcting, and the small caps were breaking out on higher volume. Well, everything since we chatted went almost straight down for another week or two, and then immediately rebounded. Fear crept into the market. We saw the VIX spike up to levels we haven't seen in years, and then, well, the markets were bought back, and just in the last about 2 weeks of trading, something like the S&P from the low of a couple weeks ago to where we are now, it's up 8-9%. Dana, what do you take away from this volatility in the markets?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. It has been certainly an interesting month or so, to say the least. There are a couple things going on, I think. I think we can separate the broader market, which is the wide, you know, conglomeration of stocks in general. And then you look at, you know, the Mag 7, the mega cap tech stocks, the mega chip stocks that had led the way for a couple of years, really. I think there are two dynamics going on and a dichotomy between those two areas. So first off, from the broad market perspective, which is for us the most important thing, what's the broad market? What's the majority of the market doing? Is it going up? Is it going down? We want to align our portfolio substantially how that broad market is moving. And right now, the broad market looks fine to us. You know, the breadth is fine. The internals look good. We're coming off new all-time highs in most of those broad averages in late July, mid to late July, including the NYSE advanced decline line, which always gives a divergence. It always tops ahead of the market. So from a broad market perspective, things look okay. Even through the recent correction, our risk model, our main quantitative model, never did give a overall sell signal on the broad market. So still looks fine to us. In fact, we think the broad averages eventually after this kind of shakeout runs its course, we think there's going to be a breakout and a new, perhaps substantial upleg or blow off. Then you switch course back to the Mag 7, the mega cap tech names, which had led the way. I think just before the last time we spoke, we talked about some of those key Fibonacci extension levels that the averages were hitting, the S&P, NASDAQ 100, some of the semiconductor names and funds really rallied right up to those substantial levels, kissed them almost to the tick, and pulled back substantially. So they were significantly extended, significantly overowned, and we've seen, just as they led the way up for a couple of years in the recent correction, they really have led the way down, and including into the bottom, into the low, about almost 2 weeks ago now. And we see those areas as still having substantial risk right here. We're looking at this correction as likely an ABC type correction where you had that initial wave down. Now we have the B wave up, and then we should have another C wave down to test or even undercut those initial lows. in that high tech mega cap space. So I think right now, if you're looking to hedge yourself, if you're looking to hedge away some risk, now is like a perfect time to add some hedges in that space, which is what we're doing right now.
So, Dana, when we look big picture at these markets, the S&P went through about a 10% drop from peak to trough. The NASDAQ, about a 16% drop. Was that a healthy correction? Or because it came so quickly, are investors right to have at least a little bit more fear in their playbook?
Yeah, I think in that area of the market, I think it was pretty much severely overowned. It probably still is severely overowned. This happened so quickly. I think there are a lot of people didn't really lighten up there, and we've gotten this bounce back. So they're probably hoping that we're out of the woods. I don't think that area of the market is out of the woods here. I think there's got to be another, like I said, that C wave down, another shakeout to kind of lighten up the excesses perhaps in that sector. So investors are not fearful in that sector right now. I think they probably should be, and they should probably lighten up, take advantage of the B wave up to lighten up exposure in that large cap, in that tech, in that semiconductor part of the market, which again, I think will lead the way lower again, at least into a retest of those former lows. At the same time, there are plenty of areas that are working fine that you can rotate into, or, you know, counterbalance any hedges you have in that tech space with some other either broad market names or defensive names that are really performing pretty darn well still.
So what are some of the best areas that you're seeing? What are some of the best names that you're seeing that still have that performance?
Okay, so and some of the same names we've been talking about for a while. On the one hand, I think of a lot of broader names will eventually break out and put in new highs, even some of the small and mid-cap stuff, especially the pure value stuff that has been kind of running in place since the beginning of the year. And don't get me wrong, if we get that wave down in the mega caps, there will be some damage done in the broader market as well. But technically speaking, they're not broken. I think they hold up reasonably well and eventually break out, put in a new up leg. So into weakness, you can be buying those. Also, the defensive sectors. And this is more of a late cycle play, which tells us that next wave up, that next leg up might be it for the bull market. But you look at the defensive sectors, healthcare breaking out to new all-time highs, utilities hitting multi-year highs, consumer staples, the REITs hitting 52-week highs. So those sectors holding up well. And also a couple other sectors, industrials are holding up well. Some of the financials testing all-time highs or hitting all-time highs. Some of the insurance, the broker-dealers that we've been in still look good. So a number of names still look fine from a technical perspective. So you can have, you know, from a gross allocation perspective, I could see having a heavy weighting, heavy gross exposure, meaning, you know, plenty of longs and plenty of shorts right here, even if your net exposure is pretty low throughout maybe the better part of this fall or the next month or so, you know, the typically seasonally weak part of the year, which is another component that kind of fits in with this scenario.
Go a little bit more in depth on that, the seasonality factor, because I find this year so interesting where markets are up nicely, but we've now had two corrections right as the calendar has turned into different quarters. Q2 and then Q3 is when we saw this weakness. We all know how Q2 ended on a high note, but how might that change seasonality wise for the back half of this year?
To be honest, seasonality is kind of tracking the historical patterns. If we look at the third quarters, typically, you know, the weakest quarter in the market, specifically July, if you're looking back, not just like major tops, but even like 3 and 6 month tops, July is the toppiest month historically in the stock market going back to the beginning. So not unusual to see the tops formed in July like we saw. And then typically the July to October period is pretty weak. We're getting a reflexive bounce here in August, which often happens. Then September is the weakest month. historically on average. And then October, like July, sees the most tops. October sees the most bottoms. So it's kind of tracking historically the seasonal norms that we've seen. Of course, it doesn't have to happen that way every single year, but I would say this seasonality is pretty much tracking those seasonal patterns, historical patterns that we've come to see.
Dan, I want to ask you about this whole concept of money on the sidelines. Look, there is still a lot of cash that is in money market funds that are yielding reasonable returns. However, look, the markets have beaten these returns, but there is a bit more fear in the market. Clearly, investors are okay with holding cash on the sidelines, earning some return on that. Do you see money on the sidelines as potentially rotating into the markets if we do see some Fed rate cuts? Or is that kind of a standard that we're going to see now where you can earn a little bit more with your cash, so keep it safe?
I honestly, I don't see a ton of cash, quote unquote, on the sideline. If you look at even a survey like the AAII cash allocation, it's down near historic lows where we tend to see markets top. It's back down to where we saw cash levels at the end of 2021 and some other minor tops back then, but before that, going back to the market top in 2000. So I don't see a ton of cash on the sideline. I see it cash as being quite low. And looking at bond yields, as we see, we expect them to continue to trend higher, not in the near term, but over the long term, over the next couple decades, track higher and higher. I think you'll see deposits in money markets start to move higher and higher to track that rise in yield. So it would make sense from an investment standpoint to allocate that way as yields go up. But right now, I don't see a ton of cash on the sidelines. One of those longer term type of indicators that we look at that indicates a lot of excess in the market, you know, too much money invested in stocks, valuations too high, that type of thing. So it doesn't preclude, like I mentioned, one more kind of blow off top in the market, which I think has a good chance of happening. But overall, if I'm looking at the cash situation, I would say it's pretty darn low from a historical standard.
Okay. Daniel, let's move over to some of the commodities then. Gold, as we're chatting later in the day on Friday here, gold's pushing to another all-time high. On the futures market, it's over 2,500, right around 2,530. I know you like to trade GLD, and GLD, we've even seen some more impressive inflows. That whole narrative of maybe the Western investors starting to take part. That being said, we're still seeing pretty low volumes on GLD, but hey, that also is at all-time highs. You got to be liking that trade, but how much further can it go?
Yeah, for sure. We're just more or less sitting on our gold position. The miners have been a little bit more volatile like they typically are, so probably trading the miners more so, lightening up into big rallies, trying to buy the dips, that type of thing. Gold, more or less just sitting on a pretty significant allocation or decent allocation. I wouldn't be chasing any breakouts because, I mean, you know, the way commodities tend to work, they tend to be more in a band as opposed to like stocks, which could trend more so higher, you know, higher highs, higher lows. Commodities tend to be more constricted, so I would be hesitant to be buying breakouts, to be honest. I would more so take some profits into big up moves. So on GLD, for example, if we get up towards 240, for example, that would be the 161 fib extension from the post 2011 decline. So I'd be looking to, if we're fortunate enough to get up to 240, we'd be pulling our horns in a little bit on gold, or GLD, that is.
Okay, let's talk about the miners then. Something like GDX. Look, GDX is now, it looks like, making a run to those 2022 highs, but that's still off of the 2020 highs and well off of those highs from 2011. How do you like the setup in GDX on more of a short-term trading basis?
Short-term trading basis, it's okay. Like I said, it's more volatile, obviously, than the metal has been. It's hard to get You know, there have been so many, you know, fits and starts. It's hard to get too confident. So, or like I said, we're maintaining a decent allocation in the miners, gold, silver miners, and more or less kind of trading around that on a micro basis. Right now, we got a decent allocation looking for, you know, next to test those highs from last month up near that 39.40 level. And then the next that target above that would be up around that 46 level, those highs from the 2020 rally. So that would be a spot that I would be looking to, you know, pull our horns in as far as the miners are concerned. That would also be the 61 retracement from the 2011 top. So again, not necessarily looking, banking on a breakout and a run to all-time highs in the miners necessarily. I'll take it if it happens, but we'll probably have a significantly lower allocation to it if it does happen. So, but for that 46 level, those 2020 highs, I'd be pretty happy with, to be honest.
Dana, what about the volume in something like GDX? It is almost historically low. We have to go back to almost 2013, 2012 to see this sort of lower volume. Does that play at all into where this market could go or tell you at all about the interest in this sector?
Well, if I've been looking at it correctly, I think that we saw a big volume spike in that initial rally off of those lows in the early part of the year. And we've talked about this. I think to me, that was significant in that it suggests that there's more durability perhaps to that move. Generally, you see the highest volume in down moves or right at tops after long extended rally. So that's not what we saw. We saw good volume right off the bat. So that tells us there's more to the bull market, there's more to the rally, which would be obviously a positive sign. The fact that we've seen lower volume of late is probably a constructive thing as well. You're not seeing a ton of turnover. You're not seeing a ton of distribution. It's more or less stock sitting there biding its time, refueling for another run higher. So I think net, the volume picture, not that we put a ton of stock into it, no pun intended, but I think net, it's been probably a constructive piece of the equation there.
Okay. What about silver, too? Silver is, in a way, underperformed gold. Some people look at that gold-to-silver ratio up around 90, which is historically a high level, thinking that silver needs to play some catch-up. But what's that silver market chart looking like to you?
Yeah, silver looks okay to us. It's often been like a higher beta play on gold. Obviously, there are other factors that play into silver than just a pure precious metals play. But for us, it's often been a higher beta play on gold. But so the chart's still constructive, looking at, you know, we trade SLV, the ETF on silver. So that rallied, you know, the recent high last month or so, or I guess it was a couple months ago, ran right into that 50% retracement from its 2011 high. So it did hit higher highs above those highs from 4 years ago or so. So that was constructive. As long as we maintain those higher highs and higher lows, benefit of doubt is to the upside. I would say the next target, quote unquote target, that we'd be looking at in silver and SLV specifically, up close to that 34, 35 level, which would be, again, a 61 retracement from that post 2011 decline, also be a 161 extension from the pullback we saw from 2020 into those 2022 lows. So technically speaking, that would make a lot of sense. I don't know that we're going back to the all-time highs in silver. It'd be hard to bank on that. So I, again, with the volatility such that it is in the market, I'd be happy, you know, maintaining a small allocation to it and then trading around it, you know, increasing the allocation in the pullbacks. And then, of course, not forgetting to take some profits into moves higher.
So, Dana, before I get you out of here, then, broadly, commodities, a lot have been range-bound. Copper stuck right around that $4 level, although it has moved a little higher this week. Crude still very much right around, let's say, mid-70s to the $80 level. Natural gas right around $2. Any commodity sectors, whether energy, whether metals, that have your attention, I guess even more so than, let's say, gold?
You know, gold's a big winner right now. I think a lot of it's tracking, it seems to be tracking the dollar. You know, the dollar's been pretty much in the same pattern, kind of, you know, we had the spike, the big drawdown, then pretty much sideways for a while now. So commodities have been tracking that as well. We've had, you know, last year, nice rallies in much of the commodity space, and then pretty much sideways. So I don't know if it's just the anti-dollar play, but I think there's a lot of that component to it, but also a lot of factor where, like I mentioned with the mega cap tech stocks, it got a little bit too popular maybe when the inflation was all the rage and people jumped on the commodity and the inflation trade. That has to get worked out. You know, it's never easy. So the Johnny come latelys have to get burned and kind of weeded out from those positions before we can maybe make that next run at that next leg higher. So I think there's a lot of that going on. So generally, we're still bullish on commodities. Again, it's a waiting game, though. So something like gold, it makes it that much more impressive that it's back up testing or hitting all-time highs. So there's a little bit more to that story than just anti-dollar, pure commodity play. So that keeps us more invested in gold itself.
Okay. Dana, great chatting with you. Always enjoy hearing what you're trading, what you're seeing in the markets. Again, Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the Lyons Share Pro website. Click that link in the show notes to follow along with what Dana is trading. Dana, thanks for your time on this weekend show. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. And everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back, focusing more on the energy sector.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.